Okay, so we've been, just to review a little bit, we've been talking about the ways to generate bodhicitta, the altruistic intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. And there's two principal ways. One way is called the seven-point instruction of cause and effect, and that's the one that we're doing right now. And then the other one is called equalizing and exchanging self and others. And that's the method we're going to do when we finish this one. Okay, so before we do either of these, we meditate on equanimity, which is equalizing friend, enemy, and stranger. Remember we did that? Seeing that, you know, the relationships are very changeable, and our mind makes people into friends, enemies, and strangers. It's not that they're, you know, a nice person or a rotten person by themselves, but we judge and evaluate them in terms of me, center of the universe, and then they become either a friend or an enemy or a stranger. But those relationships change. So when we meditate deeply on that, what happens is we begin to have a sense of equality among people in terms of our respect for them as living beings and our concern for their well-being. Okay, so we stop playing favorites is basically it. It's difficult, huh? But that's the beginning. Okay, then we actually enter into the seven points of cause and effect. So in order to, generate bodhicitta, the seventh one, the effect, we have to have a great resolve, wishing to benefit sentient beings and lead them on the path. That's the great resolve, the sixth one. To have that one, we need to have compassion, wanting beings to be free of suffering, which is the fifth one. And to be compassionate, we have to see beings as lovable first. So that's the fourth one, heartwarming love. Okay, now the technique to generate this feeling of heartwarming love is by recognizing sentient beings as our mothers, that they've all been our mothers, which is the first of the seven points. Then reflecting on their kindness when they were our mother, the second point. And from that naturally arises a wish to repay them, which is the third point. And then that leads to the heartwarming love and compassion and the great resolve and bodhicitta. Okay? So previously we've talked about equanimity, we've talked about the how beings have been our mothers in previous lives, even though we don't all remember it or recognize them as having been so. We've talked about the kindness that they've shown us as our parents, using the examples of our present parents, and really dealing with some of our issues that we may have about our own family in this life, or thinking about whoever took care of us and was kind to us when we were little. We can also use that person rather than our actual parents if we preferred. And then generating the third point, the wish to repay that kindness. And that comes automatically because when others have been kind to us and when we recognize that, then helping them in return, you know, it's just automatically a wish to repay it comes. Okay, and so then from there we go on to heartwarming love. So I believe that's where we left off. Is that correct? Okay. Quick, look at your notes. Oh, I thought we were studying death and impermanence. Oh, she's on to bodhicitta already. How did we get there? You missed a few sessions. Okay, before we get into heartwarming love, specifically, let's just talk about love and compassion in general, because there's some details here. Okay? Love is the wish for somebody to have happiness in its causes. Okay? Compassion is the wish for them to be free of suffering in its causes. Okay? Love can be towards any particular individual, and so can compassion. And in terms of just generating love and compassion in general, there's no particular order. In fact, sometimes we have compassion for somebody first because we see them suffering, and then later on we have love for them, wanting them to have happiness. So there's no particular order, just with love and compassion. Here, when we're talking about heartwarming love, it's not just general love, okay? Because general love is wishing any particular person to have happiness and its causes. And we have some love already, you know, don't we? It's just our love now is very partial, and it's it isn't generated towards all living beings, is it? Okay, so we have some love now, we have some compassion now, but it's not what we would call great love or great compassion, and it's not what we would call heartwarming love, because heartwarming love is something that's felt towards all beings, not just for a few people that we're fond of. Okay, so the heartwarming love sees other beings in beauty. Yeah. And so you can see why the meditation on equanimity is important, and then why the ones of seeing them as our mother, remembering their kindness and wishing to repay it, are important. Because to see sentient beings as lovable, we have to see them as kind, and we have to see ourselves as related to them, and we have to see that they're equal, you know, in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, equal in their relationships to us, okay? We can't just kind of jump in and with some kind of intellectual or idealistic goodwill say, I love everybody. I mean, that's what we do when we write Christmas cards, okay? And when we were children in grade school. But then we saw how long that lasts. Yeah, because it's only an intellectual love, because, you know, as soon as the other kid tattled behind our back, we didn't love them anymore, okay? Or as soon as the grown-up tattled behind our back, when we're grown-ups, we don't love them anymore either, do we? Yeah, we thought we outgrew childhood, we just developed different vocabulary for it. They don't tattle behind our back when they're adults. They say untrue, malicious stuff to ruin our reputation. Right? Okay, same thing as tattling. But we make it sound more sophisticated. So, you know, we have to be able to see beings as lovable and be able to overlook some of their defects and the possible harms that they've given us in order to generate heartwarming love. Okay? And our mind is very accustomed to seeing people's faults, and we're super sensitive, and we note down every single tiniest harm they possibly could have given us. Okay? And we're very easily offended. You know, they didn't respect me and asked me to do this, and they didn't respect me and told me to do that, and they didn't honor me and recognize my good work, and they didn't say thank you, and they didn't say you're welcome, and they don't appreciate how much I've done. And, you know, we're like so willing to be offended at the slightest little, you know, twist of anything, you know. And we're always looking out for how people have mistreated us and how they don't appreciate us and, you know, and so on and so forth. So that kind of mind that pays attention to the, you know, other, to the slight injustices that we've dreamed up, you know, because most of them, I would say, on the part of other beings, by and large, are unintentional. They don't mean us any harm, but we make it into harm. You know, and then in addition, even when maybe they did have some kind of harmful intent because they were confused and suffering, we note those things in stone, okay? We remember those, especially with the people that we're closest to, so next time we have an argument, we have some ammunition to use against them, okay? So, you know, we kind of just let it gloss over, but next time there's a fight. Well, remember 5 months ago, on January 19th at 7:30, you said this and that to me. You know, and we don't let it go. So that kind of habit of mind in which we're always seeing sentient beings as blameworthy and defective, okay? That habit, that judgmental mind, is a big impediment on the path. And it's the total opposite of this heartwarming love. Okay? So, that's why we spend so much time, thinking that beings have been our parents and remembering their kindness, you know, how they gave us this body, how they took care of us, how they taught us to tie our shoes and brush our teeth, how they gave us an education, how they put up with us when we were such bratty kids when we were little, how they put up with us when we were teenagers and even worse. You know, how they put up with us as adults when we still didn't move out of the house, you know, or when we still were bringing our dirty laundry home for them to do. You know, how we neglected them at this point or that point, or expected them to do this and that for us. And you know, really thinking of everything that our parents have done for us, you know, and what they have put up with and how they've continued to give us love and support. It's very touching. And then when we think all living beings have been like that to us, then very naturally we wish to repay that, and we begin to see other living beings as in beauty. Okay? And so instead of paying attention to the few times where we had difficulties with them, instead we pay attention to all the tremendous benefit that we've received from them. And that's very, very important. Okay, this is somewhat along the line, you know, in an earlier meditation where, when we haven't talked about this very much, but in discussing how to rely on a spiritual mentor, it's the same kind of thing of appreciating what our spiritual teachers have done for us instead of always picking at the faults. You know, and it's like anything in life, you know, we can look at its good qualities or we can look at it at what we don't like, and depending upon what we focus on, that influences our feelings. Okay, so that's why it's important to change what we focus on and develop a mind that looks for the good qualities and looks for the good in situations. It's the thing of the, you know, the glass half empty and the glass half full. Okay? But we might realize the glass is not just half full, it's very full. Yeah? If we just stop looking at the half empty part. Okay? I really see this with the prisoners that I work with. And I think I might have spoken about this before, how the guys that I work with have such love for their parents. Just. And especially their mothers, you know? And they've usually had pretty rotten upbringings and often, you know, abuse and neglect as children, but they love their mothers dearly, because even though they may have acted, you know, the kids may have acted in very negligent ways or criminal ways, their mother has always hung by them, has always been there. Yeah, no matter what they've done, their mother has always been there. And so they have this, you know, very deep kind of regard for their mother. And even though, and it's very interesting, when they're in prison, they really stop looking at the harm or the, you know, what their mother hasn't done for them. And they don't go, my mother hasn't visited me in 5 months. They go, my mother visited me last month. Yeah, even though she hasn't visited in 5 months, they don't get bummed out about that. They just feel so happy that she did visit. Okay? So, you know, there's very much that feeling, instead of looking at, you know, what they didn't do and what they did do. And then that warmth coming up. And so that's how we're also trying to train our mind to look in terms of all living beings. Yeah? And really cultivating this attitude that sees them in beauty, that sees them in kindness, that sees them as having good qualities. Hmm? So we do this very easily for our friends, okay? But that's just, that, you know, easily becomes attachment, doesn't it? Yeah, because with attachment, it's, I want you to be happy, and be free of suffering because you're nice to me, or because you're related to me, or because you stick up for me and you give me birthday presents, and you know, you boost me up when I'm down, and you do this and that for me. That's attachment. Because we can see very clearly that as soon as a person stops doing that, our feeling of fondness towards them changes. The benefit of seeing that they've been our parents in previous lives and remembering their kindness then is that that feeling of wanting to repay that kindness doesn't change when their behavior in this life changes, because still how they treated us and what they did for us in previous lives as our parents, that still remains, that hasn't changed. And we all know that sometimes relationships go through difficult points, okay? But if we remember the kindness of the person, you know, we can still have that sense of fondness and connection with them, and we don't just boot them out of the realm of who we care for simply because of what's happening right now and what they did or didn't do right now. Okay? Communicating? Yeah? So, this is something that's very practical. We have a little bit of work to do with our relationships, don't we? Yeah? And I think one of the big things we need to do is to begin to let go of grudges. Yeah? And all the things that we've stockpiled from the past, with all the wrongs that people have done us, and how hurt we feel. And, you know, the very negative impressions that we have towards certain people. And to remember, you know, these people have been our parents in a previous life. You know, they changed our diaper, they fed us, they gave birth to us. You know, this very unconditional way that parents help their children. Yeah? And to remember that this person, no matter what they've done, this lifetime, we've had this tremendously very deep connection with them in the past. Yeah, where we were totally dependent on them and they came through for us because we lived. Okay, so there is some basis of trust, there is some basis of goodwill. You know, that doesn't mean we have to trust that person the same way now this life, or act that same way towards them this life, because we act according to different roles and things, different situations. But in our heart, we can still have that same feeling of connection and goodwill towards them. Okay? And I know for me that this has been very healing. You know, I remember a while back when there were some really very difficult things going on with someone, and very painful things being said. And, you know, my mind felt like just totally, you know, in regard to this person, and, you know, how am I ever going to deal with them? And then I started meditating that they were my parent in a past life, and, you know, used to hold me when I was a baby and feed me and teach me to talk and, you know, and all of this stuff. And when I saw that that person was more than just what that present relationship was, but that there had been this kind of tenderness and gentleness before, it began to change the whole way that I looked at them this life, because I began to see that who they are this life, you know, or how my present relationship with them is just a very fleeting experience, a very fleeting appearance that's depending on conditions this life. But actually in the past there was this whole other way of relating, you know, and so that again in the future there was this possibility of being close and of being affectionate. And at least from my heart, my side, you know, not holding a grudge against them, but having a sense of goodwill, you know, and knowing that the relationship could change. Okay? So, developing this feeling of heartwarming love towards others. Yeah. This is where the metta meditation comes in. Okay? Metta, or Maitreya in Sanskrit. Metta is Pali and Maitreya is Sanskrit. It means love, and the name Maitreya Buddha, the future Buddha, you know, his name is Great Love. Okay? this is where it comes in. And when we do the metta meditation, which is popular in, you know, both in the Theravada and the Mahayana traditions, we are wishing ourselves and others to be well and happy. And so often, you know, in the traditional way of teaching it, we start out with ourselves, trying to love ourselves. Some Westerners have great difficulty with this. You know, we don't have a lot of self-love, but I think it's good to, you know, cultivate this, because self-love is very different from self-indulgence. Okay, self-indulgence we often do when we don't love ourselves and it doesn't really make us happy. Self-love is where we actually do care about our own welfare. Okay, and actually that's when we want to get out of cyclic existence, because we care about ourselves and want ourselves to be happy and free of suffering. Okay, but it can be good when we start to do the meditation to start with ourselves and not just, you know, say mechanically, may I be well and happy, but to really, you know, to really in our heart wish ourselves to be happy. So we might start out with simple ways of wishing ourselves to be happy, you know. Kind of, you know, may I have good relationships, may I have enough food, may I have good health. Okay, this kind of thing. Things of this life that make us happy. But sometimes also be a little bit careful about what you wish for. Because as they say, you might get it. You know, so if you start going, may I have this promotion, then you get the honor of having, you know, to work 12 hours a day instead of 8. So, you know, is it really that you want that promotion? Is that really what you're looking for? Or is what you're looking for a sense of self-confidence and well-being? And that's symbolized by the promotion, but it's not really the promotion. Okay, so really start to ask yourself, what really is the happiness that you want? You know, if you start wishing, you know, may I have this gorgeous huge house in the suburbs, you know, when you wish yourself happiness. Well, is that really going to make you happy? Is a gorgeous new house in the suburbs really what you want? Or is it more that you're looking for security? Or are you looking, again, for a sense of self-respect because you think if you have a beautiful house, others will like you and respect you more? What is it that you're really looking for? Okay, I think this is very important that we ask ourselves this, you know, because if we don't, we might wish ourselves to have things and then get them and find out we have more problems. And to really ask ourselves, well, what is it? You know, if I'm wanting more self-confidence, is getting the promotion the thing that's going to do it? What is the real way to develop more self-confidence? If I'm wanting security, what is the way to do it? Is having a big bank account really going to make me secure? Doesn't having financial security mean a change of mind rather than a change of numbers in our bank account? Or if I'm looking for security in my relationships, yeah, is that, you know, is that possible by being possessive of somebody else and being jealous of them? Or what's going to bring about a feeling of security in my relationships? Isn't it, again, a sense of trust and well-being in myself and an ability to ride through ups and downs, you know, that will actually free me from being possessive and jealous of the other person. Okay? So when, you know, when we're doing this meditation, you know, of love, which we're trying to get it, the ultimate aim is to focus on others. We have to start with ourselves, but to really start asking ourselves, what is the happiness we want? Yeah, because sometimes we don't have a very good idea of what it is we actually want. And for that reason, we use the wrong methods to get it, and we feel continually discontent. Okay? So what we might come to, you know, and I'm not jumping to this as a conclusion, because you have to do the whole inner work yourself, But what we might get to when we're wishing ourselves happiness is wishing ourselves to, you know, be free of ignorance, anger, and attachment. We might be start wishing ourselves to be more forgiving, or wishing ourselves to be more joyful at other people's well-being and less jealous, okay? Or whatever it is. But to really spend some time thinking about this, and then really wishing ourselves to be happy in that way, okay? And imagining yourself being happy in that way. So imagining yourself being more confident. And being more confident doesn't mean that you act arrogant. Acting arrogant and being confident are two entirely different things. You know, you might imagine yourself feeling more secure, or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, feeling more talented, feeling more loved. Whatever it is, imagine yourself having those feelings. Yeah, and wishing yourself well in that regard. Okay? So start off with yourself when you do the metta meditation. Then spread it, start to spread it to other people. Okay? It's easy to spread it to our friends. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time wishing our friends to be well and happy. But again, it's interesting to start to think when, you know, when you think about your dear ones or your family, your friends, you know, and wish them happiness. Are you really wishing that your kid has a new bicycle? Are you really wishing that your kid, you know, graduates Phi Beta Kappa from Yale? I mean, what is it? Is that really what you wish for your kid? Do you wish that your kid, you know, becomes everything that you weren't able to become? Maybe they aren't going to be happy being that. What is it that you really wish for your child? What is it that really will make your friend or your spouse or your boss or whoever it is happy? And here again, you start looking deeper into what does happiness really mean? Okay? And we know our dear ones very well, and we might even say, you know, may they be free of their self-loathing. Okay? Because we can see how much they suffer from that. May all of their inner beauty come out. May they trust themselves. Yeah, whatever it is. But to look on a deeper level about what happiness is really about, instead of, you know, may they be rich and famous and, you know, like this kind of stuff. Okay? Now we all say, well, I'm not so crass. I don't want them to be rich and famous. But if we look, we all want to be rich in our own little circle. We all want to be famous in our own little circle. We may not all want to be, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I grew up in California. but... you know, we still have this wish for fame and richness in our own little way. So let's start freeing ourselves from that and really understanding what happiness is all about. Okay? So we start with ourselves, we spread it to friends, then we spread it to strangers, and, you know, and so you start thinking of the different people who are strangers. You might start with different people in the room here that you've never met before, or that you don't know, or whose name you don't know, you know? And try and think, well, what's their life about? And, you know, and wishing them well, and thinking of basic human needs, and may they have those. You know? And think of people in Iraq, or people in, you know, Uganda, or people in the inner city, or somebody that you see in the car next to you in the traffic jam, or, you know, the people around you in the grocery store, or at the airport, or wherever you are, and really wishing them to have happiness. And again, looking deeper into what is happiness, wishing that for them. This takes a little bit more effort, but you see, if we've done the equanimity meditation before, and if we've already meditated that these people have been our parents and been kind, then we feel a relationship to them, even though we don't know them this life, and it becomes easier to to generate love for them. Okay. Then from the stranger, we go on to the people that we don't get along with, the people that we are afraid of, who we feel threatened by, who we consider vile, or immoral, or treacherous, the people who have harmed us or harmed the ones that we care about, and wish them love. Yeah, generate love, wish them happiness. Now this might be a little bit difficult because our society teaches us to hate those people. But I think hating the people who have harmed us is shooting ourselves in the foot. Okay? Because if we inflict harm on the people who have harmed us, are they going to be nice to us in return? No. It doesn't work that way. Okay, we don't bomb Iraq so that the Iraqis are going to like us. Look, what's happened? Yeah, and in our personal relationships, it's the exact same thing. We don't beat somebody up until they decide to like us. Yeah, so you see, when we inflict harm on the people who have harmed us, we are creating the causes for more immediate suffering ourselves, because they're going to retaliate, and we're creating all sorts of negative karma, which is going to bring us more suffering in future lives. Okay? So if you act spitefully towards your ex-husband or ex-wife to get back at them for what they did, they're not going to be nice to you, and you're going to be more unhappy. Okay? So I think the way to handle this is really to generate a sense of love and think, wouldn't it be nice if they were happy? Okay? So think about what it is that that they're suffering from now that's making them so unhappy, that's making them do what you find objectionable and harmful. Okay? How is it that they're what are they suffering from? Okay? If somebody's talking bad about you behind your back, yeah, what is it that they're suffering from? You know, maybe they're suffering from jealousy or insecurity or feeling like they need to control everybody, which is insecurity, isn't it? You know, so may they feel secure. May they be able to rejoice in their own accomplishments without comparing themselves to others. Yeah, may they have a happy heart and see goodness around them. May they not have a sense of lack, but a sense of plenty in their lives. Okay? Because wouldn't it be wonderful if these people did have happiness, you know, have the mental happiness that they want and have the physical things that they need? Yeah? Wouldn't it be nice if the militants had more self-respect? Wouldn't it be wonderful if they were able to practice the teachings of their own faith in a more realistic way according to the actual teachings that are in their scriptures? Okay? Wouldn't it be nice if they were able to have a kind heart to others? Wouldn't it be nice if the social structure were different so that they weren't oppressed? Okay. Wouldn't it be nice if their countries were treated with respect by other nations instead of bossed around? Okay, so really wishing them to be free of whatever suffering they have and to have whatever happiness they need. Okay, and we can see that if we wish this for them, first of all, our animosity changes, it disappears, and we stop being afraid of them. Second of all, how we act towards them is going to change, and so how they act towards us in return is going to change. Okay? Also, we've been talking so far here, you know, about happiness in a worldly way, you know, in terms of not only, you know, may they have enough food and clothing and shelter and friends, but inside themselves may they have certain qualities. But we should also think that when we're wishing them happiness, you know, may they have the happiness of liberation and enlightenment. may they not die a horrible death under the influence of ignorance and karma. May they not be reborn in the lower realms. May they realize emptiness and be free of cyclic existence. May they generate the bodhicitta and have that total happiness of an open heart that works for the benefit of others spontaneously. You know, may they have the bliss of Buddhahood. Okay? So wishing this for ourselves, wishing this for our friends, for strangers, and for people that we don't like. Okay? So this is a very, you know, potent meditation to do. Yeah. And it's very good to do it thinking of individuals, not just generalities of categories. I mean, when you're thinking of yourself, we always think of individuals, don't we? But when we start with your friends, imagining certain friends sitting in front of you. Okay, imagining them coming up and sitting in front of you. When you do it for strangers, imagine, you know, the guy who fills up your gas tank, or, you know, or the teller at the bank, or the person who answered the phone when you made your airline's reservation, or the person who set up the website so that you could do it online. You know, imagine them right in front of you and do that meditation. Okay, and imagine different individuals, different strangers. So you make it really personal. You don't just, you know, make it some abstract thing of strangers. And the same thing when you think of the people that you don't get on with. Yeah, think of individuals. Yeah, if you feel, you know, and we can do that usually fairly easily in terms of personal harm. But if we see that we're prejudiced against groups of people, imagine individual members from those groups of people sitting in front of us. And look, you know, imagine in your meditation that you look at them and that you say to them, you know, may you have happiness, may you have enough food and shelter, may you feel secure and safe, may, you know, your culture expand and show its beauty to the world, may, you know, you be free of cyclic existence. Okay? So it can be very effective when you do this meditation and imagine individuals in front. And don't just imagine feeling this towards them, but imagine speaking it and saying it. And at first, sometimes even imagining that, we feel so shy, you know. How can I say to somebody like this that I really wish them well? Well, I think it's important for us to get over our shyness at expressing our positive feelings. And be able to not only feel them, but to express that. Okay? Sometimes we even have a hard time telling people we love that we love them, don't we? Yeah? We're so shy about it. I think it's important, you know, not just to use a lot of words, but to also show it in our behavior and not, you know, not be so afraid of affectionate feelings. Hmm? Okay? So that's the, yeah. Oh, I think he just, he's not inside.
No,
he was?
Yeah, I can
turn him. Okay. I'm glad he didn't drown. He's been flying around me. Oh, there's a few of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, they're hearing teachings. That's very good for them. Can I have the glass bag?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't realize that you gave it to someone. Okay. Yeah, so these little flies flying around used to be our mothers in a previous life. Hmm? Look at that. You know? Especially if your mother's already passed away, your father's passed away, somebody dear to you has passed away, you don't know what they've been born as. You know? So instead of saying, oh, these flies are such nuisances, thank you. You know, there they are, bothering me when I'm trying to meditate, drinking my water. You drink my water. You know? You know? So instead of that, just wishing them well. You know, wow, here's some sentient being who got born in a fly's body. What a rebirth, you know? I don't want that kind of rebirth. I don't want to wish that on somebody else. You know, may these flies be free of suffering. Really? I mean, it may seem strange, but they're living beings, aren't they? They want to be happy just like we do. Yeah, think about it. That fly wants to eat just like we do. They want to feel secure just like we do. We don't want some stranger coming up and punching us. The fly doesn't want some stranger coming up and swatting them either. Think about it. You know, we have to learn to switch, you know, our places and to not just look at life through just this tiny periscope of me. Yeah, but look at it through the side of the fly. You know, I mean, that fly didn't choose to get reborn as a fly. You know, it wants to be happy. It's difficult for it now, you know. Wouldn't it be wonderful if those flies had precious human rebirths in their future lives? Wouldn't it be wonderful? If they could come in here instead of in flies' bodies, come in here in human bodies so they could understand, you know? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't it be wonderful if, you know, they learned the Dharma and they could free their minds from ignorance, anger, and attachment? Yeah? They have the Buddha potential. You know, we look at this fly and just go, whoa, you know? But they have the Buddha potential. They have the clear light nature of the mind, the same as us. There's absolutely no difference. It's not like that our Buddha potential is higher than theirs or greater than theirs. It's the same. So wouldn't it be wonderful if they were able to actualize their Buddha potential? Yeah? So think about it, you know, and try to expand your heart, not just, you know, to human beings, but to other realms of existence. To flies and to all the other living beings. You know, if you really practice this, you begin to change, your mind begins to change. When I was in Madison, I was staying at the house of another nun, Anne, who had a cat who was very frisky. And I came upstairs one morning to make my tea, and I wasn't sure if it was a real mouse or one of her toys lying on the floor until it jumped, you know. And I realized that the cat had, you know, gotten to the mouse, and this mouse was, you know, totally freaked out about the whole thing. I mean, it was a cute little thing like this. You know, my friend, of course, didn't wish him to live in the house, but, you know, he was in the house and the cat caught him. Anyway, we wound up putting him in a box and, you know, to keep him away from the cat, and took him to teachings. And we thought that surely he was going to die, you know. We thought for sure he was you know, fatally injured. So we thought, you know, it's very good if at least he has some exposure to the Dharma before he died. We took him to teachings in this little box. One of the other nuns who lived across the street took him home. And she was so cute, you know, she this nun's very creative. She, you know, she had some cotton, so she made a pile of cotton. That was his bedroom, and there was another corner of the box that was the kitchen where she fed him. And, you know, she made a little home for him. So he lived in the box for a while until he escaped from the box. And then they found that he had drowned in a bucket later or something. I mean, the karma of this poor mouse. Yeah. But, you know, at least in the meantime, I mean, they were taking care of him. He wanted to be well and happy. Yeah, you think an injured mouse doesn't want to be happy? He wanted the same way if we get hit by something. Yeah, we would want somebody to take care of us. So she took care of him, and, you know, he heard some teachings. He heard lots of prayers and mantras. Yeah, we dedicated for him after he died. Okay, so we've got to expand our notion of, you know, what is valuable, and not just think me, you know, or not just think anything like me, in other words, my friends, or at the most human beings, but really extend it, you know, to animals and the other realms of existence. So this is a way to train our mind, to rehabituate our mind with a new way of thinking. Yeah. And if you do this, you know, you can't possibly go into a restaurant where they serve live seafood and say, I want to eat that one. Yeah. You stop, you lose your appetite for doing that. Okay? Okay, so anyway, the meditation on love. So it's very potent because when we meditate on love, our own heart is totally open. And I think love is what makes us fearless. Yeah? Wouldn't you think about that? You know, that when we have fear, it's because we feel alienated and far away and distrustful from others. When our mind focuses on love and we're seeing the good qualities in others, we aren't focusing on how they can harm us and how distrustful and suspicious and fearful we are. Okay? And so then we actually feel much more confident in relationship to them because we have this sense of care and affection. So we relate to them in a totally different way. Yeah? Think about it. Think about it. Because they often say that, like, when somebody is committing a crime, that one thing that they feed off of is the sense of fear in the victim. Yeah, but if you can turn around and extend goodwill to somebody, or even extend friendship, even extend respect as a human being, that can completely switch the situation around. Yeah, so lots of times what people are really wanting is basic human respect or acknowledgement. Okay, so that's why there's this story of the Buddha. When he had one of his cousins, Devadatta was very jealous of him and was always trying to kill him. So one time Devadatta released this mad elephant that went charging towards the Buddha. And you know, the Buddha sat there and did this very same meditation on love that I just taught you. And by the time the elephant got to the Buddha, the aura of the Buddha's love and caring concern tamed the elephant, who wound up bowing down. So that's why you'll see in some pictures, you know, picture of the elephant prostrating to the Buddha. You know, I'm not sure who taught the elephant how to prostrate. And I'm not sure that we need to take that literally. Okay? But it's showing that when when we have love, we are without fear. Okay? When we lack fear, that changes the whole situation. Okay? So, that's the fourth one.